This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on my anniversary, which I totally didn't forget, even though Ob says I did because I didn't get a card or anything. Anyway, on the final hour, we're going to finish up our kamikaze talk. We're going to talk about this dirty commie, if I get to it, this dirty commie. Having a beautiful wedding, luxury wedding, when you shouldn't have any of these things. We'll talk about Gen Z men. College degree versus no college degree. Emails, more. But first, let's finish our kamikaze story. Now, America's making its way into the Philippines. I already explained that the Philippines are critically important to Japan. They have to have these resources. They took the Philippines on purpose. They needed to keep it. But again, they don't have a Navy anymore. They don't have their top-tier fighter pilots anymore. They don't have them. And Japan decides it's time to begin recruitment of kamikazes, of men who will join the special attack squadrons. That's what they called them. Special attack force, special attack squadrons. I saw both. They didn't call themselves kamikazes all the time, but they did refer to themselves as that. Why? Well, we have to go clear back to last night in hour three. Remember, the Mongols tried to invade and conquer Japan twice. A typhoon wiped out the Mongolian Navy and its army, which was sleeping on the Navy, twice. Japan called it a divine wind, a wind from God. Kamikaze is the word for it. So when a horrible, huge, ugly, conquering force is coming to take Japan, the belief is a divine wind will rise up and save the country. And for hundreds of years, that took place in the 1200s, for hundreds of years, that's what the Japanese were taught. That event has a reverence, had and has a reverence for the Japanese people. And so if you're going to sell suicide pilots and subs and other things like that, what do you sell? How do you sell it? Well, it's not a hard thing to sell at this point in time. Let's look at the Japanese perspective. I'm not doing an Americans are the bad guys thing. We are looking at this from the Japanese perspective. What is happening to you in your homeland? American planes are flying overhead and they are bombing your cities and burning them to ash. Remember that we firebombed Tokyo. And we killed twice, we burned to death twice as many people in Tokyo as we killed in Hiroshima or Nagasaki with the atom bombs. We just straight up dropped napalm, for lack of a more, I don't want to go into details of it. We burned the place down. And that was not unique. It wasn't just Tokyo. It wasn't Hiroshima. It wasn't Nagasaki. Almost every single major Japanese city was being put to the torch right now. Now, you can say, why were they so afraid of us taking over? We weren't the Soviets. You know, we weren't going to treat people the way they were treating people. How could you know that if you're a Japanese civilian and your whole family just burnt to death in Tokyo? How are you supposed to sell that family that the Americans are going to be lovely to you, which we turned out to be, but that Americans are going to be kind and lovely to you when you take over? You're not going to believe that in a million years. You're going to believe the propaganda that the people who just burnt my whole family to death, they will come do terrible things to me. They will wipe out all my entire bloodline. We need a divine wind. Now combine that with, well, there was a Japanese rear admiral. There were many guys like this, but there was a Japanese rear admiral who believed in suicidal attacks. This story's going to be not reliable, the one I'm about to say. And it's going to be not reliable because I think I read five different versions of the story. I'm going to give you the version of the story that was sold to the Japanese people. This rear admiral believed in suicide attacks. He was sending his pilots off to go do attacks. They weren't going off to do suicide attacks, but they were going to do attacks. He chooses, remember, he's a rear admiral. He's a big shot. He chooses to fly with them, and in an effort to save the homeland, he crashes his plane intentionally into an American aircraft carrier, causing all kinds of death and destruction, almost sinking it. That is the version that was sold to the American people. And that may be true, by the way. I got versions of this that said he missed, that he didn't crash his plane into it all, that he tried, but he dropped a bomb that hit. There are a bunch of different versions depending on what you read. That's not important. What is important is the Japanese people, this word spreads far and wide by the government across the country. Look at this hero. Look at this lion. Look at what he did. Let's build a shrine to him. What a hero of Japan. He is the divine wind. Now, young men, do you want to do the same? Do you think a country like that would have volunteers? Of course they would. The volunteers start coming in and coming in and coming in. Now, America's fleet gets into Leyte Gulf, the Philippines. Don't worry about the details. They get to the Philippines. And it is a massive fleet. A massive fleet. This is when MacArthur returned to the Philippines. We're taking back this critically important part. We get a kamikaze. He flies right at the ship, crashes into the ship. At first, the Americans thought the exact same thing you would think. Well, what an idiot. Must have been an accident. Did he pass out in the cockpit and he did this accident? What a moron. They quickly realized that Japan had changed its tactics. Now, let's stop for a second because we have to talk about a couple nerdy military details that will matter. You know, in all warfare, no matter the age, World War II or ancient Sparta, it doesn't matter what the age is, there's always a development in tactics and weaponry and then a counter development. The enemy will do something, you figure out how to counter it. You will do something, the enemy will figure out how to counter it. Americans, they found out early on in the war that air power can take out a ship the way our ships were currently configured. What do you do about that? We did a few different things about that, had a few different things. And so here are the things we had done, and this is going to be important when it comes to the kamikazes themselves. The first thing is, at first we did not have enough guns, anti-air guns, on these Navy ships. You need way more guns than you think you need. It's very, very difficult to shoot a plane out of the sky, even with advanced anti-air guns from a ship. So if you look at any World War II era ship, whatever it is, a battleship, a destroyer, doesn't matter what it is, you will see what look like, you can go look one up right now, as long as you're not driving, you will see what look like almost big steel coffee cups along the outside of it, little half pods, if you will. Those are gun stations that we had been adding as a country to our ships. We need more guns, more guns. Each one of those little steel coffee cups holds an anti-air gun. That's where we were putting our anti-air guns in, okay? Now, we did other things. We even created things like proximity fuses. Remember, I just said it's very hard to shoot a plane out of the sky? It gets a whole lot easier when you come up with I'll just call it a bullet. When you come up with a bullet that doesn't have to hit the plane, If it gets close to the plane, it will read that it's close to a plane and explode, damaging the plane. That is a huge advantage when you're trying to shoot these planes down. We had all these things that were done, and there were other things as well, and they were all done in an effort to stop Japanese planes from torpedoing our ships. Remember, they had torpedo planes. From dive bombing our ships. And these things we had done had proven to be very, very effective at stopping what the Japanese had previously been doing. The problem is those things are not nearly as effective against a plane that is trying to crash into you. If he's trying to fly over you and drop a bomb on you and fly away, or he's trying to fly at you low to the water and drop a torpedo and fly away, that's one problem. And that's a problem you figured out how to deal with. What do you do when he has that bomb and he's not trying to fly away? He's trying to fly it into you. What do you do? What do they do? Well, in the Philippines, we are figuring all this out. And we'll talk about that next. While we talk about that, I want you to do me a favor. Do me a favor. Think about this. I want you to think about your house or your apartment, wherever you live. What is the most precious hard copy picture you own? I'm not talking about one you took on your phone. What is the most precious picture you own? Is it in your baby album? Is it in your wedding album? Is it something from your dad or your mom? Grandpa? Something. There's something, isn't there? Or a home movie. There's something, isn't there? Well, you are one fire away, maybe tonight, from that thing being gone forever. Once you digitize it with Legacy Box, you get to keep it forever. Come fire, flood, no matter what. Let Legacy Box hand digitize your stuff. I did it. Do the same. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. By the way, they're doing a special $9 a tape. That home movie, digitized for $9. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on what is now completely a history show, apparently, tonight, talking about the kamikaze of Japan. We'll get back to our regularly scheduled programming either tonight or tomorrow, maybe next week. I have no idea. If you want to email the show, you can, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Japanese planes start intentionally crashing into our ships when we're in the Philippines, taking back the Philippines. At first, we are mortified. We stay mortified, and this is something we have to discuss here. Remember, wars, especially in the modern era, they really need public support to continue. Or in the very least, they can't afford widespread public outrage. By this point in the war, American resolve isn't what it was right after Pearl Harbor. The Americans are tired of their boys dying in Europe, dying in the Pacific. It's a lot of death, a lot of sons lost. The American military apparatus is horrified by this new Japanese tactic, and so they start lying about it. Initially, they completely banned the press from talking about it, and they started lying about it. That's how horrified they were by it. Now, let's fast forward past that. How do you handle this? It becomes a problem. The admirals are screaming at the high command. Someone better come up with a plan, because, again, you can't stop these things with anti-air for the most part. And it's just a question of momentum. Even if he's diving right at you, even if you kill the pilot, even if you shoot the plane to bits, momentum says the plane is still going to end up where it was aimed at before. You can't blow it up. We don't have missiles. It doesn't work that way. What do you do? We come up with a concept. The concept was essentially, the entire anti-kamikaze concept was known as the Big Blue Blanket. But here's what the initial concept was. If we can't stop them hitting the ships, let's stop them on the ground. We have incredible pilots. We have a lot of planes, incredible planes. Let's send them out constantly to look out, to take out any Japanese planes they find that are concentrated on the ground. When you see a Japanese airfield, assume those are all about to be kamikazes, and you take them out on the ground. It was not that effective. Somewhat effective, but not that effective. Why? Japanese are not stupid either. Always easy to think of your enemy as stupid. The Japanese knew what we were going to do. We'd been doing this kind of thing. They had built legions of fake planes and left them out on the runway, and they hid the real planes in the jungle. Again, frustrating our efforts. Measures, countermeasures, measures, countermeasures. What do you do? As far as the techniques the planes used, I don't know which one would be more difficult to deal with. Remember, the Japanese knew, they were well aware that we had radar. Radar was a huge problem for them. We could detect planes coming in. They used a few different techniques. The first one was super low. You fly your plane, essentially, I've seen, there's video of this. You can go look at these kamikazes. It looks like the plane is 10 feet above the ocean. You're that low, you're off radar. They get a plane flying in that low. Oftentimes, you can't see him until it's way too late, and the radar didn't pick him up, and soon he's slamming his plane into the side of your aircraft carrier and killing 300 sailors. Or they would fly super high, the exact opposite. Cloud cover became a nightmare because the Japanese would stay in the clouds. They would stay in the clouds. And maybe you're sitting there wondering, well, what about the radar? Didn't the radar pick them up? Again, Japanese, not stupid. Radar then wasn't what radar is now. I know that's kind of an obvious point, but now radar on a ship, it'll tell you everything about that plane you're looking at. Everything about that plane you're looking at. At least you would know everything about it. Back then, it's just a blip. It's just a blip. The Japanese, they would wait until our planes were coming back from patrol. It was known as CAP, Combat Air Patrol, but that's not important. And they would hop in behind it. They would fly right behind our Combat Air Patrol. Radar's looking at it. In radar's mind, that's just our boys coming back from Combat Air Patrol. They don't know there are Japanese kamikazes in there. They think our guys are coming back. Soon our ships are being pummeled. Now, we win the Philippines. We move on. We move on. We fight Iwo Jima. In Iwo Jima, we do get a few kamikazes, but not many. Really not many at all. We think we have stopped this problem. You know, when you get pounded like we did in the Philippines with these things, and then you fight another major war for Iwo Jima. We needed that Iwo Jima airfield. And you don't get anything near that volume. You think, well, our countermeasures clearly worked. Clearly the big blue blanket worked. We are good to go. We take Iwo Jima. We take the airfield. Then we move to the worst moment in U.S. Navy history. Far worse than Pearl Harbor was, and most people don't even know about it. It was the Battle of Okinawa, and I will try to finish this story next. Before I finish this story, let's get your dog taken care of with some actual nutrition. Real, actual nutrition, which your dog does not get from dog food. I cannot stress this point enough. Dogs don't get any nutrition from dog food. Is your dog food brown? Is your cat's food brown? Well, congratulations, it's empty calories. And I'm not judging. Fred's food is brown. How do we get nutrition in him? We sprinkle rough greens on his food. People talk about Fred's coat all the time and his stupidity, but they talk about his coat all the time because it shines. It shines because he gets vitamins and minerals. He gets antioxidants and omega oils and digestive enzymes. He used to have these horrible digestive problems after every meal. Never has them anymore. This is all thanks to Rough Greens, the number one dog supplement in the country. They'll send you a free Jumpstart trial bag of it. Go to roughgreens.com and get one. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. Or you could call them 214-ROUGH-DOG. Promo code Jesse. We'll try to wrap this up next.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Tuesday, trying to finish up our kamikaze history. Actually, I'm not even trying. I'm having myself a good time. So the Japanese have tested kamikazes in the Philippines and had some success. Then we took Iwo Jima. Now, I need to explain once again the B-29 Super Fortress and what it was doing to mainland Japan already, because this really drives home the fear they had had. The B-29 Super Fortress was our bomber, our new bomber. I am a huge fan of the B-17 Flying Fortress. You've seen those, the movie Memphis Belle. You've seen those B-17 Flying Fortresses. It's my favorite plane ever, I admit that. The B-29 Super Fortress is better than it in every way. It's bigger, faster, more range. It, in every possible way, it was a super plane. It also flew at 30,000 feet. The Japanese, over cities like Tokyo, they did not have an anti-air gun or a fighter plane that could reach 30,000 feet. Not only were these super bombers laying waste to Japanese cities, the Japanese were completely helpless to stop them. Picture what that feels like. You don't have a weapon to stop the super bomber from wiping you out. And this is what they think is coming for every inch of Japan. That is truly Godzilla. It's what they think is coming. It's already arriving. Then America lands the largest fleet man ever created outside of Okinawa. The Marines, the armies, they go on to fight Okinawa. We're not going to go into that. That's a whole other story. Horrible fighting. Okinawa, the Japanese had like 100,000 troops there. It was crazy, bloody, awful. We have this huge fleet outside of Okinawa. They decide this is their moment to send the divine wind, because if America takes Okinawa, they know the B-29s will simply rain hell all over Japan, and they are powerless to stop it. So they send waves and waves. We have not found an appropriate countermeasure yet. So I touched on this a couple nights ago, maybe last night, came up with a new concept. This whole flying around looking for the planes on the ground thing obviously was not working. They were hiding their planes. It wasn't working. We came up with picket stations, they were called. And these men, you probably have never heard of these men unless you're a World War II buff. They deserve so much of your respect. We had 15 picket stations. Draw a big circle, a big ring around Okinawa, and mark 15 different stations. What they were was a few smaller ships. We're not talking big battleships and aircraft carriers. We didn't want to waste our most prized ships on this. We would send a few ships out so their radar could pick up the Japanese planes coming from mainland Japan early enough that we could send our planes up and take out the Japanese kamikaze before they hit our ships. because that is really the only super effective way to do it. The Japanese actually had a suicide rocket plane. It's amazing. It was called the Oka. It was known as the Oka. It didn't end up doing a ton of damage because they had to attach it to the bottom of a Japanese bomber. And it couldn't take off or land, Chris. The Oka could not take off or land. They had to attach it to the bottom of the bomber. The bomber would have to fly towards the American fleet. Then the pilot would crawl down, get in the Oka. It was a suicide bomb, essentially. And it was rocket propelled. It was going 600 miles an hour. He would break off the Betty, break off of the bomber. Sorry, it was called a Betty. Break off the Japanese bomber and zoom towards our ships. Your anti-air has no chance of stopping that. None. But we figured out quickly, it's actually not a big deal. The Oka might be fast, but the Betty ain't. Just go shoot the Betty out of the sky before the Oka ever takes off. So we figured out you have to catch the kamikazes before they get to your ship. They are raining hell on the United States Navy outside of Okinawa. Did you know that we lost roughly 2,700 Americans live lives in Afghanistan? Did you know that? Did you know we lost 5,000 American sailors outside of Okinawa because of kamikazes? Double. The deadliest battle by far in U.S. Navy history. It was not one kamikaze here or one kamikaze there. They would come in waves. They would come alone. They would come at night. They would come during the day. And they were killing us. The thought was one plane, one ship. That's what the Japanese were selling. And so we sent these brave men out on picket stations. But remember, put yourself in the mind of a 17-year-old young Japanese man. You're scared out of your mind. Maybe you volunteered. Maybe you were voluntold. But you know it's a one-way trip. Now, I need to pause real quick. Why is it a one-way trip? Oh, they use words like shame. Oh, your family will be shamed. You know what that looks like in Japan? Most of these men came from rural areas, small Japanese villages, where everyone works together. Everyone knows each other. Everyone supports each other. If word got back that your son chickened out, your son didn't give his life to the emperor, the entire family would possibly starve to death. The entire family would possibly be jumped by the other villagers and beaten to a pulp. That is how big of a deal the shame was back home. So now you're a 17-year-old young Japanese pilot. You understand this is a one-way trip. There's nothing you can do about that. Obviously, you'd like to take out an aircraft carrier, but you're going to take out the first American ship you see. I mean, you're going to be tempted to take out the first American ship you see, especially because, remember, about 1 in 10 of these pilots actually made it to their destination, made it to the ship. We are shooting down a bunch. You know your odds aren't great. So you come across a picket station, a few little dinky destroyers down there. Well, screw this carrier stuff. I'm going into a dive and I'm getting mine right now. Our men died in droves in these pickets. In droves. That Medal of Honor citation I read, McCool from yesterday, last night, hour two, that's where he earned his Medal of Honor. Men dying on his ship, men burning. They were on a picket station, and a kamikaze came screaming in and took them out. I'm going to wrap this thing up here. I think that's probably about as much about kamikazes as you need to learn from me. After Okinawa, of course, we dropped the atom bombs, and Japan ends up surrendering, and you understand all that, but I want to repeat what I told you earlier. They had legions of these prepped and ready to go for our invasion of Japan. We discovered things after we occupied Japan that blew us away. And while the Marines and the Army, they were dying on Okinawa, the brave men in the United States Navy, they would wake up and just look at the sky and just wait. And they knew Today might be the day you burn to death. You're scalded to death. You drown because the kamikazes would come screaming in and they'd smash into the elevator on the aircraft carrier. So now it's all the fuel and bombs, or they'd smash into essentially the command structure. Now your commander's blown up. Now you're 5,000 sailors lost in Okinawa. Now, something to marinate on, as we brought up last night, is that suicide? That, yeah, but do you understand them a little bit more now than you did before? I don't know that I've ever researched a history topic that interested me and had my mind change as much as it changed when I was reading about these young men who are still celebrated in Japanese museums to this day. You can show up, you can read their names, you can read their letters home. Foolhardy, evil by the government, no question about it, but young men giving their lives to try to save their country from total destruction. That's the story of the kamikaze. Let's do a couple political things before we check out of here, shall we? I bet your T levels are through the roof now. What, Chris? Don't roll your eyes. I bet they are. Look, I know mine are because I take a male vitality stack from Chalk. I understand full well that my water is full of estrogen, synthetic estrogen. It comes from birth control. It's terrible. We shower in it. They don't treat it out of the water. We have a testosterone crisis that is a national crisis as severe as the national debt, because you can't continue as a country with a bunch of effeminate men. You can't even make enough babies. You're not going to have enough energy, enough strength to go on. Chalk is out there to save America. Honestly, they really are. If we can get American men to find themselves again by getting their T levels up naturally, we can save the United States of America. They have a website now, special for me, special for you, special for our listeners, chalk.com, chok.com/Jesse. Go see what they can do for you. Ask them questions. They'll answer. Chalk.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show, and what has been a wonderful Tuesday. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com is the email address. If you missed any part of that history or the rest of the show from tonight, last night, go download the podcast. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. One final quick word on the kamikaze that I did not know, something I thought was interesting. These planes, when they crashed into the ships, obviously there's a lot of fire and bombs and things like that, but if the plane remained on the ship, the Japanese plane, oftentimes the pilot was relatively intact. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't look like he's ready for prom, but he's relatively intact. Occasionally, much more than once, the American sailors, the Navy, would come up with or find a Japanese flag, and they would pull him out of that ship, and they would bury that young man with honors at sea, the same way they would theirs. They killed so many, and don't get me wrong, they were hated. The Japanese were hated by our troops in World War II. There's no question about it, but the men who were dying and whose friends were dying oftentimes thought of these young fanatics, yes, as fanatics and crazy, but as warriors doing what they could for their country. That's what the men felt at the time. Some of them, anyway. Nothing's universal. You know what is universal? Communists living a life of luxury while making you poor and miserable. That Zoran Mamdani guy, that commie who's running to be mayor of New York City, he's probably going to be mayor of New York City. You know, he talks about eliminating things like private property. He talked about abolishing private property, abolishing private grocery stores. Of course, he's one of these defund the police, eliminate the police types. You know, he had a wedding in Uganda. It was a ridiculous 3-day wedding in a compound with an army of masked security guards and a cell phone jamming system. I only brought this up. This was not for the right wingers who were listening. This wasn't probably for you. This is for you commies, you street animals who hate listening to the show. I know you think Mamdani will be your revenge. Your revenge against the people who make what you don't make and live where you don't live and look like what you want to look like. He is your vehicle to hurt the people you blame for your problems. I understand that completely. But you should also understand that he doesn't consider himself one of you at all. You are a useless foot soldier to him. You mean nothing to him. He will pretend as best he can to try to know, like he act like he knows your struggle, that he lives like you, but he doesn't, and he has no intention of doing so. Elite communists always follow the same playbook. They are always surrounded by security and armed guards and delicious steak and beautiful mansions and private jets while they deploy you, the useless, miserable, angry, malcontented street animal, out to get hurt, arrested, hurt other people, and completely destroy your life. Just letting you know, it's fool's gold, and it always has been. Now, with New York City and Cincinnati and everything else in the news, this is probably a good time to remind you about something else. Even if we deported every single illegal, the United States of America, our cities especially, but really lots of it, we have cultivated a culture of crime because our elected officials intentionally keep violent people out of jail, set violent people loose from jail. That is the country we live in now. What do you carry to stop a bad man from hurting you? I just watched a video, actually during the break, of a guy who had to be 6'3", 6'4", gigantic, walked right up to some tubby dude on the sidewalk and hit him so hard the guy's parents could feel it. Dude's knocked out, done. What does your daughter have to stop that animal from doing it to her? Berna has a compact launcher right now. You conceal carry it on your body, right in your little purse, right in your pocket. We're talking about the size of a smartphone here. I don't like guns. It's non-lethal. Shoots tear gas balls, pepper balls, kinetic rounds. It stops bad men from hurting good people. And the best part is it's legal everywhere. All 50 states. You don't need a permit. You don't need a background check. You need to go on Byrna, B-Y-R-N-A, Byrna.com and get one. Byrna.com. All right. Don't hope for the best. Set aside that ridiculous wishful thinking. Now, let's do some headlines.
And now,
here's a headline.
Go, you know the thing.
Headlines we didn't get to.
As an immigration lawyer, asked ICE for help. She said they gave her the number for Taco Bell. See, I knew I loved ICE. I'm all about that. Trump's border numbers continue to plummet to a new record low, 4,027 days. A reminder that any modern nation that has an unsecure border has done so intentionally. It's really, really quite simple to secure a border. Is Ghislaine Maxwell trying to blackmail her way into a pardon? Well, yes, that's really the essence of all pardons. I'm going to give you this. I'll protect them. You let me out of prison. Breaking. Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave tax dollars to the Soros-backed censorship giant. It's not exactly breaking news on this show. Everyone who listens to this understands it's all a gigantic scam to bloodsuck money out of your wallet and distribute it to the communist revolution. Appeals court nixes Oregon rule forcing adoptive parents to affirm radical transgender ideology. I hate these headlines out of Oregon because Oregon It might be the most beautiful state in the United States of America. I adore that place, and it just sucks. The filthy commies in Portland and Salem and Eugene have ruined the rest of that blood red state. All right. We're going to be back tomorrow to do it again, and we're going to have some fun, I promise. That's all.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.